Welcome to the Michigan Opportunity, an economic development podcast featuring candid conversations with business leaders across Michigan. You'll hear firsthand accounts from Michigan business leaders and innovators about how the state is driving job growth and business investment, supporting a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem, building vibrant communities, and helping to attract and retain one of the most diverse and significant workforces in the nation.
Hello, I'm your host today, Ed Clementi, and we're fortunate to have a friend of mine as well as a very interesting person, Faris Alami. He's the founder and CEO of Strategic Management. And with that, welcome to the show, Faris.
Ed, thank you so much for having me. Much appreciated.
Yeah, we've known each other a while, but I think it's pretty interesting everything you do. Why don't you tell people when you first meet him, it's at an event, they don't know anything about you. What do you sort of tell them to do?
Well, thank you for that question. I usually start with some jargons and then I explain. But I usually say, because I mean, it might sound foreign to some people. I run an organization that supports entrepreneurship and small business development, mainly in creating activities in the communities with a specific focus on underserved, underrepresented, or under-resourced communities. So think about like government agencies, think about, you know, community organizers, think about sometimes universities. We basically go in and help support the establishment of entrepreneurship activities or small business development activities within that community.
And it's actually, I know it's got, you can unpack some of that as we get through this, but you weren't born in the United States, right? You have a slight accent, but I know you've told me a couple times, but what's your story? How did you get here to Detroit?
Yeah, Ed, well, thank you. I mean, initially I'm originally from Palestine. I'm from Gaza Strip. I lived in Kuwait most of my life till the first Gulf War happened. And then when the first Gulf War happened, I came to the U.S. initially to go to school with a goal to go back to Kuwait and or Canada, actually. That was the plan. But when Kuwait got liberated, I learned that they were deporting all the Palestinians in Kuwait. So I applied for political asylum. And then, you know, that took its own journey about 20 years. And then I became a citizen, actually, only in 2012. This, 10 years in 2022, it'll be, it's actually 10 years. And as you know, so it's been 10 years for that citizenship. But that's how I got here. We moved to Michigan initially because when we were going to get married, I wanted to be closer to some family because I couldn't be close to my family. So I told my wife, it'll be nice if we were closer to your family at least. So therefore, we just have some family support. You know, a cup of coffee or a cup of tea with family members is always just nice to have.
And we should put a plug in for your wife. Why don't you say what she does uniquely?
Oh, you're very kind. So she's a professional singer. As you know, she does opera and jazz. And she gets to travel the country to sing, actually the world to sing with her voice. So I'm very fortunate, very lucky man.
Yes, yes, yes. I imagine she's lucky with you too. So she was here. So let's talk a little bit more about the different things you're involved with. But you're on quite a few different boards, but why don't you mention how you're tied in with Automation Alley a little?
So Automation Alley, I've been fortunate. I've been a member since, I think, 2004, five, something like that. And initially volunteering in many of the committees, initially when they used to have a workforce development committee, a market diversification committee, manufacturing diversification committee. And I chaired a few different committees and then, of course, just volunteered whenever it's needed, as needed. And for the past maybe 10 years or maybe 12, since the launch of the Automation Alley International Center, I've been lucky and fortunate to be part of their advisory board, being there as a sounding board for Noel and Lisa and team to make sure that they're getting whatever they need support from members to ensure that their international effort is going really well. And as you know, I'm very proud of that because Noel and team, they've done amazing work and they've gotten the export award for almost every president, regardless of the party, for the past couple of presidency. So it's kind of really nice and honor for me to be just part of the journey.
Yeah, you're actually following. We had Tom Kelly on at a podcast at one point too. And I know it's really grown, especially in the area of like Industry 4.0 and just some work they're doing now with the World Economic Forum. I don't know if you're engaged with some of those projects.
Cynthia is an amazing lady who went to Switzerland for 6 months, and now she's really heading that off here in Michigan. I think she's going to do amazing work for bringing attention to, you know, Southeast Michigan in specific, but Michigan in general, about automation and, you know, manufacturing. I think it's going to be a great spot and collaboration effort between the Alley and the Economic World Forum.
And we should mention Cynthia Hutchinson, because she was there for a while, and eventually we'll get her on the show someday, but I've only met her once. So let's get back again to, because you told me an interesting story in the pre-call a little bit, that you have had some engagement with the MEDC too before in some projects. Why don't you talk about that somewhat?
Yeah, MEDC has been very kind to us for a long time. As a matter of fact, probably since 2008, 2006, something like that. Initially, allowing me to speak at some of their, you know, opportunities that they had, specifically about culture, leadership, communications, and things of that nature. When they were, I did the debriefing before they went on a mission for their executive team, and sometimes for the companies that they take. And the Automation Alley always usually engaged me for that kind of speaking engagement. But also the MEDC really took us this last year, in January of 2022. They allowed us to go on a trade mission with them. We were selected one of the companies. And because of that, we were actually lucky to get a small contract from Saudi Arabia and a few other countries in the region. And in 2020, actually, they also gave us a small microloan that allowed us to, you know, weather the storm in 2020 and keep going. So I'm very thankful for what MEDC has done. I've always referred people to MEDC as an advisor, but it was... you know, and I've been doing that for almost 20 years before that. And it was really humbling to be able to leverage that kind of knowledge, to be able to tap into it and be able to receive it as well, because I know it's a very competitive spot. So I feel very lucky and fortunate to have the interaction with MEDC.
Yeah, and that's a couple different things. But let's talk first a little bit about how you do help small businesses and how they get started and some of your... Because I know you did something. Did you participate with the Goldman Sachs? And could you explain what the Goldman Sachs program is first, I guess?
Sure. Yeah. So that's out of my personal hat, which is I work with the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program as part of their nonprofit philanthropical work. And basically the goal was to support 10,000 small businesses in the U.S., you know, thrive. And it was really built on a program that they have done internationally initially that did really well, which was 10,000 Women Program. So the idea was, want to do something for the people in the U.S. And this was really the birth of it, came in 2008 after the crash of the, you know, economy of 2008. I've been involved with them since the launch here in Detroit, and I've been fortunate enough to be involved in some of the launch that they have done out of Boston, Babson College, for nationwide enrollment. And it's a great program. So anyone who is looking, you know, who's having some revenue in their business and they have a couple of employees, they should apply for the program. They receive basically what equals about $50,000 scholarship that basically they'll go through the training for 4 months with individuals that will advise them, and then different modules, training modules that people will come speak on. And that's very powerful. You know, there are lots of people who probably could speak a lot more on that as well. I'm one of the advisors for the program.
Yeah, we've actually had two previous guests that have gone through that program, because they readily list that sort of as like almost like another college or an educational program after they participated through that. And it must really make a good impression on a lot of folks, because everyone I know that talks about it obviously speaks highly of the program.
Well, it's 100 hours of education. So it's 100 hours in classrooms and about another 100 hours of, you know, of private work. So it's 200 hours, maybe 250 hours in 4 months of spam. So it's a lot of hours that is focused on their education. And usually it elevates the entrepreneur language and the small business owner language and the way that they communicate about their business and the sophistication that they could articulate their story to the world, leveraging the knowledge that they may gain from interacting with such program.
I always like also the angle of the symposium part of it, where they bring in professionals to come in and talk to small business or people starting up too. And I think that's one of the best ways for people to learn how to do stuff, when they hear other people have gone through the struggles of getting started.
Yeah, peer-to-peer learning is the best way to do it. I agree, Ed. Absolutely.
And you also touched on something kind of briefly there, but you do a ton of international. I mean, I say it jokingly, but I think you spend more time out of Michigan than you do in Michigan. But like, how many different countries have you worked with? I mean, it's got to be up there, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I've been lucky. We've touched, I think right now we're at 100 countries that we've touched working with. And when I say that, we're usually working with institutions launching programs in those countries, usually strategy-wise for the country on how to deploy a program, what kind of program, what segment of entrepreneurs do we focus on, how long is the program, who should we get involved, what companies should we help them do the training, that kind of level of sophistication. I'm lucky to be part of that, but also been lucky because a lot of times they've allowed me to interact with entrepreneurs in programs that we might have agreed to deploy as a test for the market or as a feeder or as a trainer where we took some of their local companies and trained them on delivering some of our methodology or our work. So it's been very humbling, and I've been lucky to have touched 100 countries as of today.
Wow.
That could change, you know, over the years, but I'm sure it'll change. And yeah, I when you joke about miles, you know, I am a million mile clubber, meaning that I've spent 1 million miles on air in the last 10 years, probably an average of 200 to 300,000 miles a year on a plane. And usually, for those who are listening and they enjoy flying, that's usually within 7 to 10 days flight within a month. So it's only 7 to 10 days within a month. And you can imagine how much flying that is for that. I just came on a trip and I really use it as an example. I was in Saudi for 2 days, Kuwait for 1 day, Amsterdam for 1 day, France for 1 day. I left on a Saturday and I came back on a Wednesday. So, you know, you just go in for a meeting, you do your thing, and then you move on.
Yeah, and I imagine in the era of the pandemic, that had to be so much harder, too, with all the testing and all that you had to do.
But, yeah, I mean, it slowed down. And between March of 2020 till probably October 2021, there was almost no flying for me. And then after that, it really started taking off. I'm about now maybe 50% of the time that I was spending flying is I'm about 50% of what it was in 2020. And there are definitely trends to be back to the level of, you know, travel probably next few years between 2023 to 2024. I could see that that's going to come around.
And you also... you know, there's not many people we have on the show, but I know a lot of them have probably been through programs, but you're also involved with Leadership Oakland County too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm also lucky to be on the Leadership Oakland board. Actually, I love Leadership Oakland. One of the things that I mentioned about Leadership Oakland, as well as, you know, Global Ties Detroit, you and I serve on that board as well. There are lots of boards that I'm involved in, and I'm very lucky to be part of such groups because you learn much more than they think that you're given. And I'm always honored and humbled to be part of such a group. But these kinds of programs, I think, are powerful, impactful, and every community has one. And I encourage people to visit their own community and learn about their own programs like that.
You're listening to the Michigan Opportunity, featuring candid conversations with Michigan business leaders on what makes Michigan a leading state to live, work, and play. Listen to more episodes at michiganbusiness.org/podcast.
Let's get a little bit into what are some of the challenges and sort of things you see or disruptors you see on the horizon that might affect either for small business or your own business. Or I know you also run a youth group too, a youth foundation too, right?
Yes. Thank you so much, Ed. You've done a lot of homework. I appreciate you. So Connecting Dots Globally is a nonprofit that I established a couple of years ago. The goal was from it is I've been running a program actually for years, for almost 20 years, teaching high school and college students entrepreneurship and STEM and global trade in a fun way, in a bootcamp style and a, you know, couple of weeks style. So we have different tracks, as you can imagine. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to be doing that because I really believe the more we expose youth for such ideas about STEM, about entrepreneurship, about global, about culture, the better the world I feel that we could live in. Because at the end of the day, the more you learn about something or about a person, the more likely you might be intrigued to learn more about them or be interested in them versus trying to hurt them.
Yeah. And I would imagine because of your international background, I didn't get the exposure, but I'm sure a lot of them are getting international exposure just by meeting you. And, you know, not a lot of people meet whatever high schools you're going to really have that many, unless their parents are in it. But otherwise, you really don't get exposed to it until you go to college for most kids, I'm guessing.
For sure, for sure. And that program, I don't know how much you got to read about it, but basically we bring about 5 to 15 different country representatives to speak about their country within the program. We bring 5 to 15 entrepreneurs to speak about their startups and their business. And then we bring about 5 to 15 other volunteers, business coaches, business trainers to talk about how do you put a presentation together? How do you come up with an idea together? How do you come up with financing of it together? How do you make money on it? And, you know, pulling it together. It's very powerful to really watch youth the minute you unleash, I usually say just exposing them to some ideas and just watching them unleash the talent that they have. That's just most of the time is hidden or just, you know, suppressed because of the structure that we have built around to force them to behave in a way or another.
Yeah, it's funny. We had that. There was a group in recently, you know, from Kazakhstan who are all like under, I think they're all under 19 years old. But I gave them a tour of Henry Ford, the museum. And it was almost like a totally different tour just because they saw a ton of things that I probably saw all the time, but they saw it so much differently through international eyes, as well as, you know, younger eyes who maybe didn't have baggage, you know, to get rid of, to see something. And that's always, is there any other disruptors you want to mention before we shift to the last couple of questions?
Yeah, one of the things that we, you know, I'm seeing in my business, we do a lot of what's called capacity building tour, and I've seen a big, you know, ask from the globe on it. And basically, what it is we bring people to the U.S. or other countries, and we basically, for about a week to 10 days, depending on the program, we have gone a little longer, but usually a week to 10 days, we do half day training with them about a topic, and then we do half day touring with connecting them with other resources. And my uniqueness, I think that I've been lucky enough to see, and I think there are lots of things that are bubbling up around the world, what I call regionalism and localism. It's even becoming bigger because of what happened with COVID a couple of years ago. And it's really bubbling up everywhere. And I'm seeing it everywhere because I get to see all these people come here and work with us. And as we unfold the discussions, you're learning so much about how they're thinking, how they're focusing on ideas. As a matter of fact, I just had a Kazakhstan group, half angel investors and half entrepreneurship ecosystem builders, incubators, accelerators, had SME development centers, managers. They spent 10 days with us in San Francisco being exposed to some of the ideas that they may have there, as well as a little bit of our training of how we approach such economic development ideas for that specific small business entrepreneurship space. And it was really fascinating to see how there is a really big sense of, you know, not necessarily nationalism, but I think more of a regionalism approach to their challenges as well as the opportunities that they have. And as well as I call it building bridges between their nation and other nations. There's a really eager sense of eagerness to build bridges between their nation and the U.S. or other nations.
And you kind of, this might be a little redundant because you sort of hit on these two points a little bit, but you had such a unique life to come to America and challenging, I would imagine, as well, to get here, because you never, I'm sure there were times you didn't know what your path was going to be. What advice would you give your high school self now, knowing what you know now? Would you have told yourself anything different about how to progress in life?
I think one of the things I would reflect back telling myself, which I tell youth today, is don't be set with the way that you think you want to be, because sometimes you take paths and roads that could lead you somewhere that is better than you thought or imagined. And I say to the people who are supporting them, because I've been lucky to have a lot of, I call them angels in my life, that have showed up and given me a hand when, whether I was homeless or whether I was fighting immigration, any of those stages, angels showed up and had faith and believe in who I am when maybe I didn't necessarily knew that I even needed it or wanted it. And I think surround yourself with those kinds of individuals that are looking for you, looking to make an investment in you, looking to making sure that you're thriving no matter what, and overseeing the challenges or the situations or the moments that you are in at that moment.
Well, and it helps you're a good person too. I know I've known you for a while and you are a nice person and you help out a lot of people. So it's not by accident. I think you ended up on this path. And so your very last question, you've been here for a while and you got kids. What do you like best about living in Michigan, either a destination or an event or a festival?
Yeah. So the first time I got that question, I think it was at Art of Mission Alley, as a matter of fact. And they're like, why would you leave Arizona to come to Michigan? What's wrong with you? And I said, honestly, one of the things besides family, of course, being here, and now we have a lot more friends and family that are here, is really the four seasons for me is exciting. I grew up in a region that never really saw four seasons. So seeing the snow, seeing the leaves change colors, seeing the sun in the summer, you know, these, you know, three, four seasons that we get here, most of the time, I used to tease people, in Arizona, I had two seasons, either hot or extremely hot. That was it. So now, you know, to have four seasons, very exciting for us. The parks are really, you know, just walking in the parks and, you know, all the parks that we have and the water that we have, it's just beautiful for me. And I love the downtown river walk and others like it, or the pathway for bikes, or just walking around. It's for me, Michigan has a lot to offer to the world, besides the four seasons, the awesome people that you get to meet, like you, Ed.
Well, you're kind. Well, once again, our guest today was Faris Alami. He's the founder and CEO of International Strategic Management. You keep up the good work and you keep it going at it. And I'm sure you're going to always have good fortune as you work through life. But thanks again, Faris, for doing the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, and thank MEDC in general.
Join us next week, where our guest will be John DeMaio. He's the president of Graphics Group, and he'll talk a little bit about the EV battery business.
The Michigan Opportunity is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion.